This is a very significant parasha, Parshas Re'eh, as we go into the very great month of Elul. Month of Elul, so here we are again. A year passes by in the blink of an eye, and here we are approaching the Yom Ha'Narayim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Elul. And this coming Sunday, this coming Shabbos, tomorrow will be, they'll be benching the Chodesh, benching the month. With Elul, and this month is Elul, so I always think about this, that in yesteryear, I don't know if maybe in certain communities, certain shuls today, there are people who do this, but there are stories told about in the yesteryear, yester generation, when they would hear the word Elul being mentioned in the shul on Shabbos by benching the Chodesh, people would shudder. They would begin to cry and shudder because this is the month of preparation. Now, having said that, it's a period of Yamim Naroyim, days of awe, days of fear. The contrast between Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur season, and Pesach and Shavuos is the difference between love and Yira, between love and fear of Hashem. Fear of Hashem is this period right now, going into Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, is awe and trepidation of Hashem. It's coming close to Hashem through fear and trepidation. And then the contrasting midah, the balancing midah of love, is Pesach and Shavuos. So they're and this is also why Pesach is a Rosh Hashanah too. And we have two Rosh Hashanah, we have two beginnings of the year. We have the Pesach season, we have the Rosh Hashanah season. So Elul is the month towards that. And Re'eh is always the parasha right before Elul. It's always the parasha which we read before Elul. What I'm going to say right now, I was not going to say, but I want to give credit to Yossi Asiag. As I was walking in, he was walking out, and he told me a vort, he told me a very good message. And I really wasn't going to say this, I wasn't going to go to the beginning of the parasha, but it's such a good vort. It says at the beginning of the parasha, Re'eh, where it says, Re'eh nochi nosein lefneichem ayom bracha klala. See that I place before you, Hashem says, or Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, in the words of Hashem, see that I'm placing before you, bracha and klala. I'm putting blessing and curse before you. And this is the segue to the mandate and to the principle. We have bechira, we have free will. We have to use our free will properly. So that's the introduction to the fact that there are choices in life. There's blessing and curse. But then the next pasuk over here, it says, es habracha shetishvu. What is the bracha? What is the blessing? Is that you'll listen to the mitzvahs of Hashem Elokeicha. Now, there are different interpretations. One famous explanation is the bracha is listening to Hashem. That's the bracha. Yeah. Listening to Hashem is a bracha. So we oftentimes think that bracha is referring to the dividends and the payment and the schar, the reward for listening to Hashem, which is true. But there's also in listening to Hashem, that's a bracha. So as a bracha, asher tishmuel mitzvahs Hashem, the bracha is listening to the mitzvahs Hashem. Ashanuchi mitzavacha esachem hayom, that I'm commanding you to today. And the curse is imlosishmu. The curse is not listening. Is not listening. So they're the two contrasting points of choice: blessing and curse. Listening to the mitzvahs, curse not listening to the mitzvahs. And this is a very good message as we go into Elul and Rosh Hashanah. So he just pointed out right now, you pay careful attention to the wording in verse 27, es habracha, the blessing, in contrast to verse 28. The haklala and the curse. What is the difference between the two phrases? In the first one, it's es habracha. It starts off with the letter, with the word es, which is really grammatically, or it's not really translated. It's a connective word, but it's oftentimes before a noun. Es habracha, the blessing, and then in verse 28, the haklala without the word es. Klala, the curse without the word S. So what does that mean? So he said he didn't say who he heard this from, but the S is Aleph Tof. It's a remez to the whole Aleph base, Aleph through Tof. So it's a remez. It's an allusion to the whole Aleph base. Wow. Meaning, when it comes to bracha, the bracha is a bound. The bracha is voluminous. The bracha goes from the beginning till the end, from the beginning of the Aleph Beis till the end of the Aleph Beis. Bracha is tremendous. And this goes, it's consistent with the idea that Midah Tova, Merubah Midas Peronius, that the measure and the attribute of goodness that Hashem bestows upon the world is actually disproportionately greater than the measure of punishment and din which he brings into the world. That's always the modus operandi of Hashem in the world, that the midah of tova, the midah of the measure of goodness, always outweighs the measure of negative. And therefore, before the word klala, it doesn't mention the word S, Aleph Tshutaf, indicating like a limitation to the klala, limitation to the curse, because Hashem does not want to curse us as much as he wants to bless us. And therefore, for the blessing, S habracha, Aleph Tshutaf, brachas abound from the beginning till the end, the brachas beginning till the end, over and over and over again. That's what he said. That's a, it's an encouragement. So while we have this this encouragement or this warning as we go into this period to think about choices, think about our choices, think about the choices of blessing, thinking about the choices of curse and the negative. This is the month of choices, of big choices. We're making big choices going into the high holidays, but at the same time, it's balanced with the encouragement and the comfort that the brach is always greater than the curse. So it's a beautiful idea. Mm. Thank you, Yossi Asiag, for that vort. So that was that. So that was an impromptu message, but now we get back to the main program. So what I wanted to zoom in on is a medrash later on in the parasha, which is chapter 12, verse 20 and 21. And we've spoken about this pasuk before. In fact, actually last year, if you remember. But I realized this afterwards after I looked through my notes. Oh, I spoke about this last week. I spoke about it from a completely different perspective. And this today is going to be based upon this medrash, which I saw this week. The pasuk is talking about the permit to eat meat, the allowance to eat meat. The pasuk says, this is on page 1004, 1005 in the art scroll, Ki yarchiv Hashem alekecha es gevulcha. When Hashem expands your boundaries, he's referring to when you go into Eretz Yisrael. When you enter into Eretz Yisrael, when Hashem expands your boundaries, Kasha Dibaloch, as he said to you, Varmata Ochla, and you say, I shall eat meat. I want to eat meat. Now, what is this? What's the backdrop of this? The backdrop of this is that up until this point, meat was not allowed except in a sacrificial fashion. It was in the journey during the desert, the only time the Jewish people could eat meat was only through sacrifices. And obviously, we eat meat not through sacrifices today. But when was that allowance given? It was first given over here. This is the pasuk, which it was the gateway to now eating meat on a regular basis, not through sacrifices. And the pasuk says, Ki yarchiv Hashem alekech, when Hashem expands your boundaries, and it says later on that because now you're far away from the Beis HaMikdash, you'll be far away from the Mishkan, far away from the Beis HaMikdash, and you won't be able to go there so readily to be able to bring sacrifice, to be able to eat meat. Hashem expands your boundaries, as he promised you. And you say, now I'd like to eat meat. Kisav nafshach alecho, because your soul desires to eat meat. Basa, meat. With all of the desire of your soul, you're allowed to eat meat. I'm giving you a permit. I'm allowing you now to eat meat. Hashem is saying to you, up until this point, you weren't allowed to eat meat on a volitional, casual kind of basis. Now you can eat meat. I'm going to give you an allowance to eat meat. Next pasuk. When Hashem expands the place and makes it far away, the base of Migdash, you won't be able to bring it there and do it in a sacrificial way. You can now eat it regularly. And here's a very, very important phrase. And you will slaughter, wherever you are, you'll be able to slaughter it, slaughter the cattle, slaughter the sheep, which Hashem has given to you, as I've commanded you. You'll slaughter it in the way that I've commanded. This is one of the classic examples of Torah Shebal Peh, couched away, hidden away in the verses. The whole world of Shechita, the whole world of the laws of Shechita, of slaughtering animals, you know, kashrus, milk and meat, bas v'chala, tiruvas, all of these different areas of halacha, voluminous, so many pages, thousands, and Joe will attest to this. There's a lot of material when it comes to the laws of kashrus.
Oh, yes.
So, but Shechita, the laws of Shechita, Where does it mention Shechita the Torah? Where the halachas of Shechita the Torah? Nowhere, with this one exception, this pasuk of it. Zovachta, you'll slaughter the animal. Hashem's given. Kashet tzivisicha, as I've commanded you. Where have you commanded me? Torah Shebal Peh, the oral tradition. Hashem spoke to us. Hashem told Moshe, Har Sinai, and Moshe then told it to the people. Kashet tzivisicha, as I've commanded you. So this is one of the examples where the Torah Shebal Peh is like staring at you in the face in this pasuk over here. But another thing which Rashi brings from the Sifri, on this whole passage of being allowed to eat meat, you see how it begins. The first phrase in the pasuk is "Ki yarchiv Hashem elokecha," when Hashem expands your boundaries. Hashem expands your boundaries, and the Medrash says, the Rashi brings, "Limda Torah derech eretz." The Torah is teaching us good conduct. It's teaching us good midos derech eretz. Shelo yisava adam lechol basa, that a person should not desire to eat meat. Ella mitoch rachovas yadayim, except through expansiveness of hands, only when you have the means to be able to do it. Meat is a luxury for some. I'm not getting into the question of what's healthy, what's not healthy, and vegetarianism and everything. But meat is always been seen to be a luxury. It's a luxury item, a good steak. So it's something which is only allowed to be eaten mitoch rechavas yadayim, with an expansiveness of hands, v'osha, and wealth as well. Actually, not from the Sifrin, the Chulin, Gemara and Chulin. It's a Gemara. So only when a person has the ability and the luxury and the ability to have these luxuries, that's when you're supposed to have the meat. So it's a very big lesson in general about overindulgence. And I think that's what I spoke about last year, about overindulgence and proper balance of engagement in the physical world. But you see a very, very important lesson over here to think, am I able to afford this? I mean, this really flies in the face of a credit card generation, putting everything on credit and not living, according to one's means. But that's what this is also alluding to. So this is the passage of meat.
Where did it say that about
the credit cards? I mentioned credit cards there. I was just adding that myself.
Where did it say that only when you have the means to?
Rashi brings this from the Gemara, from the Gemara in Chulin. Okay, so that is the pasuk. That's the passage. That's a couple of insights into the pasuk. The Medrash classically, right? The Medrash Rabba classically takes a pasuk and flies off into a whole world and takes you on a whole scenic route through the pasuk on many different levels. So the Medrash says on this pasuk, after quoting the pasuk, the Medrash links another pasuk in Tehillim, as it typically does. It will take a pasuk elsewhere in Tanakh and say, this pasuk over here, it reminds us of and is linked to and associated with another pasuk in Tanakh. What is the other pasuk in Tanakh that the Medrash links it to? In Tehillim. In Tehillim, 146 verse 7, which we say every day in the Hallelukas. Here's the pasuk: Osa mishpat lashukim, no sein lechem l'ra'evim, Hashem mati asurim. What does that mean? Osa mishpat lashukim, that Hashem does justice for those who are oppressed and afflicted. Right, again, it's in Tehillim. It's in the Hallelukas of the morning davening. Hashem does mishpat, he exercises justice on behalf of those who are oppressed. No sein lechem l'ra'evim, he gives food to those who are hungry. Umati asurim, and he releases the bound. Right? And the Medrash says, this pasuk is associated with our pasuk about eating meat. Right? And it stands out like, it's obvious, right? Isn't that obvious, right? What the connection is? Now you see, we need a little bit more. So the Medrash continues and says, Amr Pinchas Bar Chama. Rav Pinchas Bar Chama said, "Melameh." So, what the Medrash is going to do is going to go through these three phrases. Osa mishpat lashukim. He does justice for those who are oppressed. He feeds the hungry and he releases the bound. So the Medrash explains each of these phrases. So, and each one, the Medrash says, is all talking about the Jewish people. It's a reference to the Jewish people, as follows. So the first one that he does justice for the oppressed is a reference to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, that he did justice on behalf of the Jewish people who are being oppressed in Mitzrayim. And the Medrash says, very interesting, it says, it's a melamashim b'mitzrayim yosem m'shivim umos, that in Mitzrayim, there were more than 70 nations that the Egyptians had jurisdiction and power over. More than 70 nations. They were the kind of the top of all the empires of the world at the time. And they had jurisdiction. They had, there were more than 70 empires, 70 nations, and the Jewish people were one of them. And of all of these other nations that the Egyptians oppressed and persecuted, the only ones they did that too was the Jewish people, scapegoat. This is where the coming of the original scapegoat story is that the Egyptians could have oppressed everybody, but they specifically picked upon the Jews to oppress. They're the oppressed ones. They're the Ashukim, which the Pasuk is referring to. Umi Osalem Din, who did justice against the Egyptians on behalf of the Jewish people. Osa Mishpat LaAshukim. Hashem is the one who does justice against those who, on behalf of those who are oppressed. So that's part one of the pasuk in Tehillim. Next phrase in the pasuk: No sein lachem le'reivim, that he gives food to those who are hungry. Again, Elu Yisrael. This is also a reference to the Jewish people, as it says in Devarim earlier on, a few parashas ago. V'yanecha v'yerevecha, that Hashem afflicted you in the desert, and He made you hungry, but He fed you the man. Right, He made you hungry. We were hungry in the desert, but He gave us the man. A man, this manna, which was unfamiliar to us. No one ever saw this before, but He gave it to us in order to teach us. Ki lo ala lechem levada yichya adam. Not only upon bread alone does a person live and survive, but rather al kol mutzapi Hashem, on the mouth of Hashem does a person live, because this is a holy food. It's a heavenly food. Without the decree of Hashem allowing the man to fall, so then we wouldn't have anything. But it teaches us that everything comes from Hashem, comes from heaven, comes from Hashem. And then the Medrash goes on, and also you didn't have, you know, that I also provided you with your clothing didn't wear out in the desert, your feet didn't swell, all of these things in the desert. But the point is that Hashem feeds the hungry. The man, the man, the water in the desert, Hashem feeds the hungry. That's the second pasuk, the second phrase. So again, you know, what this has to do with our pasuk over here, we'll get to in a second, right? But the Medrash is breaking up the different phrases. The last one, Hashem mati asurim. He releases the bound. He releases the bound. So what does that mean, refer to? Well, there's many, many examples. A person's in jail, a person's in prison, a person is psychologically bound, emotionally bound up. I mean, many ways in which that could be manifested, that Hashem releases us from the psychological and the physical bounds and shackles that we experience in life. Mati Asurim, that's what it means. Now I'm saying this by myself. Right? I just said this by myself. I didn't read that inside, because the Medrash doesn't say that. The Medrash says Mati Asurim means something totally different, right? It doesn't mean that He releases the bound, the physically, the emotionally bound, the psychologically bound up ones. It doesn't say that. And this is the connection to our pasuk. Again, the Jewish people. Rabbanan Amrei, the rabbi said, Shmona Devarim Asalem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are eight things which Hashem forbade, V'hitalehem Shmona. And He also allowed eight things as well. There are eight things that Hashem forbade, and eight things which Hashem then permitted. Two of them, the Medrash mentions, I'll mention some more in a second. Two of them is, for example, Chalev. Forbidden fats. Mm. Forbidden fats is not so familiar of a halacha, but the Torah is very explicit about the fact that there are certain parts of the animal which are forbidden. Fats, certain fats are forbidden. However, that's only applicable to domesticated animals. Only the forbidden fats of domesticated behemoth, but not the fats of a chaya. Right? So I forbade these fats for you, but I permitted these fats for you. Another example, b'shatnez. Shatnez is forbidden. Wool and linen in a garment, forbidden. So I forbade wool and linen as a mixture in this garment, but I permitted for you wool and linen in this garment over here. What's that, this garment? What's this garment? Titus. There's no halacha, right? There's no prohibition of shatnez, of wool and linen, in a titus beged. Because you can have linen titus or woolen titus on a linen garment. We don't do that practically, but technically you could. There wouldn't be a violation of shatnez, of mixing wool and linen. That's another example. Hashem forbade over here, but permitted over here. He forbade the shatnez over here, permitted it over here. The Medrash says other examples. Another example is, here's a good one, the shibuta fish. Right? The shibuta fish. I don't know if such a thing exists, but the Medrash says that the taste, don't pull a face, the brains of a shibuta fish taste like pork. I forbade the pork over here, but I permitted the taste of pork over there. Another example. Another example is the udder. This is an interesting one. This Joe will like this one, right?
Yeah.
Right? Milk and meat, right? Yeah. Milk and meat is forbidden. Basar v'chalav, outright forbidden. You can't mix milk and meat. There is one instance where milk and meat is totally permissible. The udder of a cow. You're allowed to eat the cow's udder. Not that it is a delicacy in certain places, right? but the udder is allowed because even though it's absorbed, so to speak, the milk taste of the, and it has milk within the walls of the udder, it's not considered milk and meat. Mm. Another example of how this is forbidden. This is forbidden over there. This is permissible over here, right? So we're getting closer now to the connection to the pasuk, right? I'm going to tell you what the connection to the pasuk is, our pasuk over here, but then I want to take a slight detour around to show you something else. But the last thing the Medrash says, this is the meaning of our pasuk, that I forbade for you meat over there, and now I'm permitting meat over here. I forbade meat before you coming into Eretz Yisrael, because you can only eat meat in a sacrificial way. But now I'm allowing you to eat meat when you go into Eretz Yisrael. You can eat meat whenever you want to eat meat. And therefore, that's another example. I forbade over here. I permitted over here. What's that to do with Mati Asurim? He releases the bound. That was the Medrash is explaining this pasuk. The reason is because the phrase Mati Asurim, the word Mati, to matir, it means to release asurim, those who are bound. But it also means, matir means to permit, from the word mutar.
Mutar.
He permits asurim, that which is forbidden. The word asurim is either bound up or forbidden. So you can actually twist the meaning of the phrase in Mati Asurim. He permits that which is forbidden. He permits. There are certain instances and places and times when that which was forbidden now becomes permissible. You know, this reminds me of a very clever puzzle. You could ask somebody, what is asur when it's mutter and mutter when it's asur? Now again, what's asur when it's mutter and mutar when it's asur? Right. The answer is, it's a fact, is a wild dog.
A wild dog.
A wild dog, an uncontrollable dog. It's asur, it's forbidden, asur, forbidden, when it's mutar, when it's released, when it's unleashed. But it's mutar, you're allowed to have such a wild dog. It's mutar, it's allowed when it's asur, when it's tied up.
Huh.
You're allowed to have if it's tied up. So it's an application of those words, right? The word mutter means either it's either released or allowed. Asur, it's either tied up or forbidden. So the Medrash is actually taking this last phrase of Mati Asurim, that even though the pshat level of that pasuk is Mati Asurim, which means he releases the bound. You know, similar to the other examples, he does justice for the oppressed and he feeds the hungry, he releases the bound. So here the Medrash says, no, here means we can apply to our pasuk and say, here it can mean he allows that which is forbidden. What's an example? Meat was once forbidden, now it's allowed. What are the other examples? The shibuta fish, shatnez, all these other examples. But this is the linkage to the pasuk. Meat, once forbidden, now it's permissible. The question is, two questions we have to ask on this medrash, right? One question is, what is the message? What's this message of that which is forbidden is now permitted? It's almost like saying, it's like Hashem saying, you know, I'm not so bad, I've forbidden these things, but it's okay. I've got a few other things, in store for you, which are okay. He's like placating us. It sounds funny, right? And also, why? What is, we went through, the Medrash is explaining the first two phrases of the pasuk, of he does justice for the oppressed, he feeds the hungry. What does that have to do with the last part, right? And also this last phrase of he permits that which is forbidden. It's going off into a whole drusha level, whole world of drush. What does that have to do with the first couple of phrases, which are just understood on a basic pshat level? These are the questions. So the first question is what's the message of this idea? That which is forbidden is now it's okay. So I said, in a joking kind of way, placation. But the truth is, this is what one of the commentaries says. There is this idea of placating the Yetzer Hara. We have this idea, right? That Hashem placates the Yetzer Hara. We have a Yetzer Hara. So you know, it's we have it's difficult. You know, mitzvah sometimes can be difficult, be challenging because the Yetzirah. So Hashem placates the Yetzirah. Like, for example, the Yefas Toar, the captive woman parasha, Parshas Kisetze, that Hashem permits. It's another, it's actually interesting. Oh, that's one of the examples in the Medrash, of one of those eight examples, right? That's another example that the Torah is speaking to the Yetzirah of a person, that the soldier with all of the challenges and all of the hardship of battle and then the Yetzirah, so Hashem permitted the captive woman in that one instance. We're not going to go into that subject right now, but that's the idea, is lo dipra Torah ala keneged Yetzirah. The Torah speaks towards the Yetzirah. And that's an example. So there are many examples like this. Hashem is placating us and is showing us, you know, yes, there are laws, there are restrictions, there are things which are forbidden. It's not across the board. It's not oppressive. It's not the word I'm thinking of. It's not restrictive. There's another word. It's not onerous. It's not onerous. It's not an onerous system of law. That's one pshat. The other explanation which they give is this, is that the message of that which is forbidden is now permitted. What does that tell you? It tells you that you can't apply your rationale to the mitzvahs. You can't apply your own rationale because if something is forbidden, it's forbidden. If fish are forbidden, they're forbidden. Right, if things are forbidden, they're forbidden. If milk and meat is forbidden, it's forbidden. You know, chutneys, for example. If chutneys are forbidden, it's forbidden. You know what? For things which are forbidden now to become suddenly permitted, it doesn't make sense. It's paradoxical. Mm. Now it's not here. It's absolutely forbidden, and you have to pay the price for it. And all of a sudden, it becomes totally permissible. Reminds us that who is the author of the law? Hashem. He's the one who makes the rules. I'm the one who forbade over here. And I'm the one who permits over here. To remind you, it's not up to us to decide what's allowed, what's not allowed. I can do that. I have the control over these mitzvahs. I said over here it's forbidden. You don't understand? It's not for you to understand. We said this on Wednesday. The questions we ask as Jews are what and how, not why. That's not our questions. Why? When you go down that road of why, we start veering off and start changing the rules. We have to just know what and how. Hashem says, I'm the one who forbade over here. I permitted over here because I'm the arbiter. I'm the designer of these laws. And halachas are halachas. And you have to follow my rules, regardless, even if it doesn't make sense. With that understanding, this pshat, that understanding explains the connection to the two previous phrases, right? Because when are people most prone to deviate and to kind of start figuring out things for themselves, what's allowed, what's not allowed. When are people most prone to start thinking for themselves, yeah, I'm allowed to do this. You know, I'm allowed, you know, I know Hashem said it's forbidden. You know, I'm allowing myself to do this. I'm permitting this for myself.
When
they're comfortable. No, on the contrary, not when they're comfortable, when things are difficult.
Really?
Yeah, because now I've got challenges. So now I can kind of like, I've got to now deal with the challenges. When the suffering, when there's oppression, when there's persecution, and I mean, this, we see this historically. What happened in the 1800s? What happened in the 19, you know, when the Jews came to America? When the oppression, the persecution, I mean, this happened in Germany, the whole, one of the major forces, you know, factors which stimulated and began the reform movement in Germany was we got, because it's too difficult, because the persecution and the anti-Semitism and the rejection of Jews in society, we have to adapt, we have to change, we have to relax the laws. We have to relax. Circumstances now allow for the relaxation of the halachas, relaxation of the laws, in order to fit in order to protect ourselves from persecution and anti-Semitism and pogroms. That's what's happened throughout history. When they start, you know, experiencing the oppression, and we're ashukim, that's the word that Pasuk says. We're oppressed, we start like, you know, we start relaxing the laws, we start, you know, allowing ourselves to do things which we shouldn't do because in order to avoid suffering. And then also when we have hunger, we don't have financial freedom, and we have to now make a living. I mean, these are the stories abound. They came over on the boat, they came to America. We have to make a living, but I'm getting fired every Shabbat. Every time I keep Shabbos, I get fired. I'm being fired every week. I have to make a living. I've got to support my family. I've got to support my family. What else am I supposed to do? What else can I do? I'm compelled. I'm coerced. I'm stuck in this situation. So what's the pasuk say? Osa mishpat lashukim. Hashem's in control, and Hashem will take care of you and do judgment and do justice for those who are oppressed. Trust in Hashem. He's in charge. It may not be always so easy along the way. No sein lach la'arevim. He's the one who feeds. Don't start taking this upon yourself. Give it to Hashem. Allow Hashem to take care of you and to do justice to those on behalf of those who are oppressed. The time will come and the freedom will come. He'll give the food to you. He'll supply with you. It may be difficult along the way, but the time will come. You'll be released from all of this. And therefore, as a result of that, don't start changing the halachas and don't start relaxing the laws and breaking Shabbos and breaking kashrus and all that because you feel compelled you have to do it because I'm the one who said things are forbidden and I'm the one who allows. It's not for you and I to decide what's allowed, what's not allowed. Right? Don't allow all of these different factors of oppression and hunger and circumstances and personal situations to determine, to decide how I'm going to now fashion and change the law, because the law is the law, the halacha is the halacha, and there's only one being in the entire universe who can say something is allowed, and that's a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's Hashem. And that's the meaning of the pasuk, that's the connection of the pasuk. Mm. It's a powerful message, beautiful message, right? Not beautiful, but very, very important message. As we go into Elul, to remember that the law is the law, the halacha is the halacha, and we can't start making kind of, you know, like doing it our way, this way, that way. We have an excuse here, an excuse there. I can kind of, you know, do it this way because why? Because, you know, I've got circumstances, difficulties, challenges. We have to work through the challenges. We grow through our challenges. The challenges build us and we transform. We become different people, become elevated, higher people through the challenges. You know, if we're going to always live with the challenges, we just remain childish in a certain sense. So that's the goal, is to recognize Hashem is in charge. He's the Osa Mishpat Lashukim. He's the Nosein Lechem L'Re'evim. He provides, he looks after us, he does justice for the oppressed, and therefore he's the only one who can allow and forbid. And if he said this is forbidden, it's forbidden. If he says it's allowed over here, it's allowed over here. It's not for us to do that. So may we all, you know, take this message for the coming of Elul and be a good segue into Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.